You are listening to Sid Weighs In, where Tuck School business professor, associate dean for executive education, and an expert on strategy and leadership, Sidney Finkelstein, shares his views on what leaders are doing, why they are doing it, and whether it makes sense for them and for you.
This is Sidney Finkelstein with another edition of Sid Weighs In, where I talk about one of my BBC columns and have it in the form of a podcast with a guest host. And today I'm very fortunate to have Ashley Hovey with me as guest host. Good morning, Ashley.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing really well. Thanks.
Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. So I am currently a second-year student at the Tuck School of Business. I will be joining British Telecom in London when I graduate. And my background is in media and tech. I spent a couple of years on-site at Facebook working with Nielsen to build an advertising product, and then moved on to the Disney account in L.A. And so just spent a lot of time working through a lot of data.
Sounds like a couple of boring jobs at Facebook and Disney, huh?
Yeah, you know, bad time to be in a great industry.
And so what are you up to these days?
It's almost Super Bowl Sunday, so I have been getting bombarded with a bunch of ads that are pre-ads for the ads for the Super Bowl. I don't know if that's something that's new
I've
to me.
I've seen it.
Yeah.
And I'm not getting it. What's up?
So, I mean, it's something new this year where they're looking at the data. And they're looking at people's stories and what people want to hear. And they want to know more about the ads during the Super Bowl. And so they're building up this whole precursor event. And it's really interesting. It's something that, you know, I think is a trend that we're seeing in a lot of different industries. And we're seeing it here in advertising. They're using data to figure out how to get the best response from their audience.
Do you think they're actually going to change any of the ads on the basis of all this work?
I mean, absolutely. We're going to hopefully see some good results from this. But if they're really driving the audience and some ROI on this, they absolutely will.
So this is a good example of big data in action?
Absolutely. I mean, yeah. I'm excited. I mean, Super Bowl. Go Seahawks.
Seahawks?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
3 years in Seattle, so I got to.
Can't blame you. Well, let's see what some geniuses might say about all this topic, such as...
I'd love to hear it.
Albert Einstein, for example. Well, actually, I have a lot of titles for this podcast. One is, What Would Big Data Think of Einstein? But the one I actually like better is, Would Einstein Be Locked Up Today?
Sounds scary.
I know. What are we talking about? A friend of mine recently remarked on the uncanny ability of Netflix to recommend movies that he almost always finds interesting. Amazon, too, barrages email inboxes with book recommendations, among other things. Indeed, the entire advertising industry has been transformed by its ability to use data to target individual consumers in ways unimaginable in the Mad Men era. That's just what you're talking about, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah. The power of big data goes far beyond figuring out what we might want to know. Big data helps pharmaceutical companies identify the attributes of their best salespeople so they can hire and train more effectively. Big data can help predict what songs are likely to be hits, which wine vintages will taste better, and whether chubby baseball pitchers have the right stuff. But big data should not be confused with big ideas. It is in those ideas, the ones that make us conjure up the image of Albert Einstein, that lead to breakthroughs. The benefits of big data are so, well, big that there's no going back. Yet I don't need to reread George Orwell or scan the latest headlines about the massive snooping of personal communications orchestrated by the NSA in the U.S. to feel at least some discomfort with big data side effects. One that seldom gets noticed: in a world where massive data sets can be analyzed to identify patterns not easily identified using simpler analog methods, what happens to genius of the Einstein variety? Genius, to me, is about big ideas, not big data. Analyzing the attributes and characteristics of anything is guaranteed to find some patterns. You know, garbage in, garbage out. It is inherently a theoretical exercise, one that requires minimal thought once you figure out what you want to measure. If you're not sure, just measure everything you can get your hands on. Since the number of observations, the size of the sample, is by definition huge, the laws of statistics kick in quickly to ensure that significant relationships will be identified. And who can argue with the data? Unfortunately, analyzing data to identify patterns requires you to have the data. That means that big data is, by necessity, backward-looking. You can only analyze what has happened in the past, not what you can imagine happening in the future. In fact, there is no room for imagination, for serendipitous connections to be made, for learning new things that go beyond the data. Big data gives you the answer to whatever problem you might have, as long as you can collect enough relevant data to plug into your handy supercomputer. In that world, there is nothing to learn. The right answer is given. Now, I like right answers as much as the next guy, but in my experience, those answers are just not enough to motivate people to action. For instance, knowing that email follow-ups to sales calls are the most time-efficient is really nice, but that fact is unlikely to convince a salesperson who has always picked up the phone to change his approach, especially if his approach has always worked for him. People don't think in the same way that data behave. They need to be convinced. They want to be part of the creation of the solution. They don't like the solution to be imposed on them. You can have all the optimal solutions you like, but in the real world, managers need to convince other people to execute on those solutions. And people have a habit of wanting to contribute to the development of those solutions. In business, big data doesn't necessarily drive out creativity. It's just that it's scientific imprimatur. It makes it very hard to argue the opposite way. Yes, it's possible for creative people to start further down the field when they have a deeper understanding of the underlying relationships that govern their discipline. Advertisers can design better campaigns if they truly understand what consumers are buying and why. But sometimes you need to break the rules to create anything new. Apple's original iPod was such a hit precisely because it emphasized simple and elegant design features rather than what everyone else was competing on, MP3 sound quality. Just as companies that build their businesses on best practice ensure that they'll never do more than anything else, companies that let big data dominate their thinking and management style will not be the ones who change the rules of the game in their industry. Even in the leading repository of big data thinking, Silicon Valley, how many startups have taken form specifically to capitalize on big data insights? Not Facebook, not Google, and definitely not Apple. These companies actively leverage big data, and really, really well, to grow their businesses. But the spark that led to their creation was personal, was entrepreneurial, it was even idiosyncratic. The inability to understand or capture the human element, that personal, even idiosyncratic thinking that drives genius in business, is the biggest danger that comes from big data. Has there ever been a major breakthrough whose origin didn't reside in the brain of a man or a woman? Imagine in the not-too-distant future a brilliant person, a genius, proclaiming a new way of thinking that is contrary to big data. What would happen to her ideas if she bucked the orthodoxy of big data to suggest a different view of the world not consistent with the dominant digitally-derived solution? We might lock up her ideas. If anyone paid attention to what she said, she would be denounced as uninformed. Companies like civilizations advance by leaps and bounds when genius is let loose, not when genius is locked away and deemed too out of the mainstream of data-driven knowledge. What if Albert Einstein lived today and not 100 years ago? What would big data say about the general theory of relativity, about quantum theory? There was no empirical support for his ideas at the time. That's why we call them breakthroughs. Today, Einstein might be looked at as a curiosity, an interesting man, whose ideas were so out of the mainstream that a blogger could barely pay attention. Come back when you've got some data to support your point.
That was great, Sid. Thanks. I do have a couple of follow-up questions, if you wouldn't mind indulging me.
No questions. Okay.
No questions. Oh, man. First, I really like that you highlight the advertising part. I am excited to see how that goes. But one of the takeaways I got from this was maybe that you argue data may not change behavior. Now, that seems like a pretty aggressive stance. Am I hearing you right on that?
Well, you know, I certainly took a controversial tone with this one. But I don't think I go so far as saying, you know, data has no impact on behavior. After all, you know, around my wrist, I've got one of these little Fitbit. You got one
of
these? Yeah,
I actually, you know, I'm embarrassed it's in my bag.
Does it work when it's in your bag?
It doesn't work in the bag.
Well, anyways, I click on it, and it tells you how many steps you've taken.
How many have you taken today?
This is not a big number, is it? 3,957.
We're going to leave here immediately and get him outside.
So I look at that and I say, that is unacceptable. And it gets me going, you know what I'm doing? I shouldn't tell you this, but this is what I do at night before I go to sleep. If I'm not at 10,000, I'm walking around the house in circles.
You're kidding.
Drives my wife crazy.
I'm sure it does.
I don't know why, but I'm going to get to that 10,000. So yes, you know what? Data can actually affect behavior, at least for me.
And do you think that we're seeing that in companies? I mean, you talk about Google using data, but it not being necessarily the reason for its innovation. I mean, how do you kind of, is it changing behavior? Is it not? Like, where do we see kind of the Googles of the world in this scenario?
Yeah, Google is really an interesting company. I can't believe that they're using data to come up with some of the crazy ideas they're coming up with. I mean, they're actually closer to the Einstein model as I think about it. What about this driverless car? Where's the data that says people want a driverless car? I can't imagine, other than, you know, accident insurance companies or, not accident insurance, I should say body shop companies. They're all for cars that have no drivers.
Well, I mean, I guess it's kind of to the argument about at Ford. You know, if Ford had paid any attention to consumer data, then he would have built a faster horse and carriage.
Yeah, exactly right. So breakthroughs come from that creative spark. I mean, Steve Jobs famously, I mentioned, the iPod, but it goes on to iPhone and iPad. Whoever knew we needed an iPad until, well, it showed up. But I don't want to say, despite the kind of argument that I made, that big data is irrelevant. It is here. It's here to stay. It's important. There's a lot to be learned. The problem is, if that's kind of your mindset, then you're going to really limit yourself because you're just going to follow what the data say, and that's not where creativity comes from.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Nice talking to you, Ashley.
All right. Have a good one.
This has been Sid Wazin. If you would like to comment on this podcast, follow Professor Finkelstein on Twitter @SidFinkelstein, #SidWazin. Thank you for listening.